Chapter 17. I wasted no time. We went upstairs, and I was already preparing my sight. A nurse opened the door to the stairway, and I simply stepped into the first door on my left, the catatonic girl's, Miss Becton's. I stepped into the doorway and raised my sight. She was a young girl, still in her late teens, nervously thin, her hair a shocking color of red that for some reason did not strike me as a dye job. She lay on her front, her head turned to the side, muddy brown eyes open and blank. Her back had been covered in bandages. As my sight focused on her, I saw more. The girl's psyche had been savagely mauled, and as I watched her, phantom bruises darkened a few patches of skin that remained, and blood and watery fluids oozed from the rest of her torn flesh. Her mouth was set in a continual, silent wail, and beneath the real-world glaze, her eyes were wide with terror. If there'd been enough left of her behind those eyes, Miss Becton would have been screaming. My stomach rolled, and I barely spotted a trash can in time to throw up into it. Murphy crouched down at my side, her hand on my back. "Harry, are you okay?" Anger and empathy and grief warred for first place in my thoughts. Across the room, I was dimly conscious of a clock radio warbling to life and dying in a puff of smoke. The room's fluorescent lights began to flicker as the violent emotions played hell with the aura of magic around me. "No," I said in a vicious, half-strangled growl. "I'm not okay." Murphy stared at me for a second and then looked at the girl. She isn't coming back," I said. I spat a few times into the trash can and stood up. My headache started to return. The girl's terrified eyes stayed bright and clear in my imagination. She'd been out for a fun time, a favorite movie, maybe coffee or dinner with friends afterward. She sure as hell hadn't woken up yesterday morning and wondered if today would be the day some kind of nightmarish thing would rip away her sanity. "Harry," Murphy said again, her voice very gentle, "you didn't do this to her." "Damn it," I said. I sounded bitter. She found my right hand with hers, and I closed my fingers around hers with a kind of quiet desperation. "Damn it, Murph. I'm gonna find this thing and kill it." Her hand was steady and strong, like her voice. "I'll help." I nodded and held tight to her hand for a minute. There wasn't any tension in that contact, no quivering sensation of excitement. Murphy was human and alive. She held my hand to remind me that I was too. I somehow managed to push the sense of visceral horror I'd seen filling the girl from my immediate thoughts until I felt steadier. I squeezed her hand once and released it. "Come on," I said, my voice rough. "Pell, are you sure you don't need a minute?" "It won't help," I said. I gestured at the radio and the lights. "I need to get this over with and leave." She chewed on her lip, but nodded at me, and led me to the door across the hall. I didn't want to do it, but I hauled up my sight again and braced myself as I followed on Murphy's heels and looked at Clark Pell. Pell was a sour-looking old cuss made out of shoe leather and gristle. One arm and both legs were in casts, and he was in traction. One side of his face was swollen with bruising. A plastic tube for oxygen ran beneath his nose. Bandages swathed his head, though bits of coarse gray hair stuck out. One eye was swollen, mostly shut. The other was open, dark and glittering. Beyond the physical surface, his wounds were very nearly as dire as those the girl had suffered. He had been brutally beaten. Phantom bruises slid around his wrinkled skin, and the shapes of distorted bones poked disquietingly at the surface. And I saw something about the old man, too. Beneath the shoe leather and gristle, there were more shoe leather and gristle, and iron. The old man had been badly beaten, but it wasn't the first such he had endured, physically or spiritually. He was a fighter, a survivor. He was afraid, but he was also angry and defiant. Whatever had done this to him hadn't gotten what it wanted, not like it had with the girl. It had to settle for a physical beating when its attack hadn't elicited the terror and anguish it had expected. The old man had faced it, and he didn't have any power of his own, beyond a lifetime of stubborn will. If he'd done it, as painful and as frightening as it must have been, I could steel myself against looking at the aftermath. I released my sight slowly and took a deep breath. Murphy, poised beside me as if she expected me to abruptly collapse, tilted her head and peered at me. "I'm all right," I told her quietly. Pell made a weak but rude sound.
"Whiner, not even a cast."
I faced the old man and said, "Who did this to you?" He shook his head, a feeble motion.
"Crazy."
Murphy started to say something, but I raised my hand and shook my head at her, and she fell silent, waiting. "Sir," I said to Pell, "I swear to you, I'm not a cop, I'm not a doctor. I think you saw something strange." He stared at me, his one eye narrowed. "Didn't you?" I asked quietly.
Ha,
he tried to say, but the word broke into a racking, quiet cough.